Roll call.
Roll call for Tuesday, February 12th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Esquibel. Geist.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks. Hines,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Ross.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Senator Peterson.
Our Heavenly Father, we are grateful this morning to be gathered together as a state senate. We're grateful for the privilege and honor it is to serve the great state of Wyoming and its citizens, and for the blessing that it is in our lives. We ask Thee, Father, this day that Thou would bless us, that we might be in tune with Thy wishes and will, and do those things that would best represent these fine citizens of our great state. We're grateful for our health, our strength, for the staff that supports us here, and for the work that we are able to accomplish. And we are grateful for the many blessings that we enjoy in our lives. And these things we say in the name of Thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Members of the Senate. Wait. Members of the Senate, today we're joined by the first grade class from Cheyenne Dildine Elementary School. These students are here this morning to lead the Pledge of Allegiance and to teach us their school pledge. So please join me as we welcome these young students and their teacher, Ann Carter, to the chamber.
Yeah. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball.
Let's turn around and teach it to them. We have to say it really loud. They're not the fastest learners.
Oh.
I hope you will cut my budget.
Thank you all for leading us in the pledge today and for teaching us the Dildine pledge as well. We're glad you were able to join us. We're proud of your efforts. Yes.
Future T-Bird.
Yeah.
One of you.
Senator Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. May I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. Over there in the galley, if they'll stand up, is junior leadership of Laramie County. They're all juniors in our local high schools, and we're looking around, picking their desks. So please welcome them.
Welcome to the Senate. Hope you enjoy your day. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, if I could have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, I'd like to introduce you to some great members of Team Wyoming, if they'd please stand. Team Wyoming, I'll introduce team that's here. Chet Johnson, saddle bronc rider from Sheridan. Chet is the reigning champion of the San Antonio Stock Show and Rodeo and a past champion of the Canadian National Finals. Chet Johnson of Casper won the world championship belt buckle as a team roping heeler in 2011. Chet joined the Wyoming Office of Tourism at travel media promotional events in both Chicago and New York City last year. Jason Miller from Lance Creek. Jason is the 2007 world champion steer wrestler. He's off to a great start in 2013, having won $10,000 at the first big rodeo of the year, the Stock Showdown in Denver. In addition to his state sponsorship, Jason was asked to join the Mountain Dew team last year via Admiral Beverage in Warland. Les Shepperson, steer wrestler from Midwest. Les was the top bulldogger at the National Finals Rodeo 2 months ago in Las Vegas. His horse, Dylan, was voted Steer Wrestling's Horse of the Year last year. Please welcome Team Wyoming, great ambassadors and all-around great guys.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, let the record show that I'm proud that half of Team Wyoming is resident of Senate District 30.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for being here today, and thank you for what you do for the state of Wyoming and spreading the good word about this great state. Keep up the good work, and we'll try to make sure that we follow you in all your competitions. God bless you guys. Any further privileges of the floor? All right. Reading correction approval of the journal. The reading clerk will read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 11th, 2013 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. The doctor of the day is Nima Azerbahai, I think. That's how you say it. No nurse of the day. Thought for the day is that we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. Concurrences. Well, where is he? Let's do, while he's signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 18 being original, Senate File 14. Reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 18 being original, Senate File 4, an act relating to livestock.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 18 being original, Senate File 4. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 19 being original, Senate File 27.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 19 being original, Senate File 27, an act relating to environmental quality.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 19 being original, Senate File 27. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 20 being original, Senate File 62.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 20 being original, Senate File 62, and act relating to the State Board of Education.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 20, being original Senate File 62. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 21, being original Senate File 124.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 21, being original Senate File 124, and Act relating to liens.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 21, being original Senate File 124. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 22, being original Senate File 30.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 22, being original Senate File 30, and Act relating to special districts.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 22, being original Senate File 30. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 23, being original Senate File 68.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 23, being original Senate File 68, and Act relating to taxation and revenue.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 23, being original Senate File 68. I have so signed. Concurrence. Senator Bebout, are you ready on message number 310 in reference to Senate File 105?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read the message.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 310. Concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 105, School Capital Construction. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move message number 310, concurrence requested for Senate File 105, School Capital Construction, and I would ask the body to vote no. Mr. President, what the House did was pretty interesting, actually. They tried to, if you look at the concurrence request, you look at the first part of it, page 1, line 5, they inserted in here, in case the school resource officer's bill does not move forward, they put some language in here that, in effect, would take money in $250,000 and put in some language for the SROs. I don't think this is a place for that. I'd be interested to see why the House thinks we should do that. Then, Mr. Chairman, what they did on the effective date, we had very carefully worked a bill in the Senate that on the capital construction side, we would have the effective date be the end of this fiscal year, but the other parts of the CapCon would be effective immediately because we needed to have some effective immediately. With all the money we're spending on school capital construction, Mr. President, we didn't want to put it all out there immediately. That's why we did that. They changed that to everything effective immediately. Actually, the next part is probably okay, Mr. President, where they added $400,000 to a Laramie 1 Junior High School because they had some information coming for the district. Then went through the Facilities Commission who agreed, and that's probably okay. They also made a change to the, if you look down there on page 9 after line 20, they've redirected $517,000 within the Natrona budget to get involved in reimbursement for acquisition and demolition of some properties they had to buy. Then you go on, you look at number D, that again is for the SRO that we're trying to put that bill into this bill, which I don't think is a good idea. Then, Mr. Chairman, if you look at page 12, line 3, after line 3, the language there, what that does is for the Natrona County money of $119 million, that moves that up to be effective immediately instead of June 30th of this year. I can see why they may be looking at that, but we're sure going to have a lot of projects out there, Mr. President, that are going to be bid. And then if you go further onto the down at the bottom, this is a major, major point, Mr. Chairman, on page 11, line 3. You know, in the bill left here, it took out judicial review for the districts, and they put it back in. And we had a lot of discussion on that, and the Senate did, in fact, think the bill should be left where it is. It should be taken out. They put that back in. Mr. President, page 9, line 20 is just cleanup language, and that's okay. And then at the second page, or the last page, section 3, is balancing amendment, and that's okay. I think there's just some things here that are significantly different than when the bill left the Senate, and I think we sure should go over there and have a visit with them. So I would ask the body to vote no and not concur.
Discussion. The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate file 105. You've been asked to vote no. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Von Platern,
no.
President Ross,
no.
Closing vote, closing, vote closed, 1 aye, 29 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 105. Conference committee will be Senator Bebout, Chairman, Senator Coe, and Senator Rothfuss. Reports from Standing Committee.
February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 179, Failure to Observe Closed Roads, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Esquivel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Platern, Senator Von Platern, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 91, engrossed, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 72, engrossed, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 2. Reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 66, engrossed, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 12th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 6, travel, recreational life, and cultural resources, to whom was referred House Bill 77, engrossed Wyoming Lottery. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Kraft, and Driscoll. No, Senator Barnard and Christensen. Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 12th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 131, engrossed, Game Fish Definition. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft, and Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Bills? Senator Coe.
Bill 91 has an appropriations. I would request it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Without objection, House Bill 91 will be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations. Bills on second reading. House Bill 52, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 52, Workplace Safety Initiatives.
House Bill 52, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Vice President?
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Yeah, Mr. President, there was some discussion yesterday on the how the experience rating would be affected with this particular bill, and I've further looked into that, and really they are separate. And with what this bill does in terms of the incentive provided relative to you, first of all, you have the drug and alcohol program, you have the safety plan in effect, both have to be approved by the department, and now this additional 10%. But the experience rating is really a separate entity. It's based on the amount of claims you have as a company. It's a 3-year rolling average, and the way that works, it's depending on the size of a company that you have in terms of how much money you pay into workers' comp. And so the larger companies pay more, obviously, and then they can go up to 65% on the experience rating, either positive if they have very few claims or negative if they've had a lot of claims. And that goes down to about 20% for the smaller companies. And so the experience rating really is a separate issue. This bill deals specifically with the premium that we pay to, as terms of our workers' comp rates based on each individual entity or that we have and how we fit into the scheme of which different areas were covered under it. So they're really a separate issue, and I want to be sure the body understood that.
House Bill 68, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 68, Life Resource Center.
House Bill 68, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 78, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 78, Budget Review Process.
House Bill 78, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 79, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 79, Collection of Unpaid Wages.
We have an amendment. The reading clerk will read in second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 79.
House Bill 79, second amendment reading number 1, page 2, line 2.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 79 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I think the easiest way to explain this amendment, because it's a short one, is just to read it as it would work into the bill. And how it would read, Mr. President, is would read as, but does not include the value of vacation leave accrued by an employee at the date of termination if the written policies of the employer provide that the accrued vacation leave is forfeited upon determination of employment, and if the written policy is acknowledged in writing by the employee at the time of commencing employment or at the time of entering into a revised employment contract. Let's go into the written part, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think that provides protection both to the employer and to the employee as to what the policies of the company are. And it also provides protection to the employee if the policy changes, and that policy may or may not change if there's a change in ownership. But it provides protection to the employee that if there's that change and it goes from a change in policy where they weren't forfeit to one that was forfeited, then there may be a claim at that time, Mr. President, to go back and pick up those non-forfeited benefits. But, Mr. President, it's essentially does spell out, and I think makes sure that everybody knows what the policies are. I think it goes right to the heart of the situation that we had here that we discussed about why this bill was brought forth. And all it really requires is that everybody knows what the policies are and that they acknowledge that. And with that being said, Mr. President, I think that the situation that occurred that brought this bill forward wouldn't occur because the department would know exactly what the policy was and would know that the employee knew what that policy was. And essentially, I think that in that case, then the employer would have had the benefit of that knowledge of the department of the relationship between his employee and his company. So, Mr. President, I think it goes to the heart of what the bill is trying to do. Also offers protection to both the employer and the employee as far as the written acknowledgement. And I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Discussion? Senator Scott.
And Mr. President, this is not my bill, but I do have some reservation about the very last clause in this amendment. The bulk of the amendment seems to me to be saying virtually the same thing as the bill, but the phrase, or at the time of entering into a revised employment contract, Mr. President, what about the circumstance where there isn't an employment contract? Are you implying that there is one? Is that what's going on? What about the circumstance that all that's happened is the employer has changed the policy? There's no revised employment contract. You're just one of the conditions of employment has been changed. I think you would want to get, at that time, a signed acknowledgement. Does this amendment accommodate that circumstance? The case we had in committee, Mr. President, the employer had not changed the policy. They'd paid off the people that had accrued leave under the old policy. So under those circumstances, getting a signature that the employee acknowledged the revised contract would have been easy and make sense, but does this amendment accommodate that as to its specific language?
Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think I see where the sponsor of the amendment is moving towards, but I think we need to be very cautious on this. Folks, when you go back and look at the language that was adopted, it was pretty carefully narrowed. You know, a lot of folks with small businesses may not even have written policies, or they may have just simply one sheet and employees see that. When you begin to look at vacation pay, it's all over the map. It may be, look, I pay you monthly. I expect you to not abuse the system. It may be I give you one day a month for vacation or sick leave, or I may give you a joint vacation sick leave. More and more you see these benefits being tied to a term so that you have to be used before the end of the year, use it or lose it. And so you have all these arrangements that exist, and then when the employee is terminated or quits, then you begin to, you see the sort of the climbing back where employees said, I thought I was earning these benefits along the line, much like you would in a public employment sector. But in most instances, employers are, you use it or lose it before the end of the year, but if you get to the end of the year and you haven't quite used it, we'll let you slide and carry it over to the next year. And these policies are not necessarily as articulated in written documents as you believe they are. Now, if you go to the existing language that's offered simply says that if you happen to have a written agreement and says that on termination you don't carry a four of these benefits, that's sufficient to demonstrate that there was no agreement. So it's a bright line. It says if you got an agreement, it's over, you don't get it. It doesn't tell you all the other issues, and that is what happens if you have no agreement, but there's a verbal agreement that you have to use it or lose it, or maybe be joint vacation and sick leave. What the new amendment does is begin to push this into the threshold of employment manuals, saying you've got to have an employment manual signed at the time addressing the policy, and suggest that if you have none, the default is all vacation is accrued, all vacation time accrues a benefit for which you're entitled to compensate it, which is a relatively new idea. I mean, you go back 20 years ago and people didn't even think that your vacation was an accrued benefit. It's simply something you had while you're working, and when you left, it was over. So now what we're doing is creating it as a contract at the commencement of employment that has to be established, which is a new requirement. And if that's the case, that means if you want to change your policy 2 or 3 years later, you have to pay the employee to amend the policy. So I'd be cautious in moving this direction. And, you know, if we're talking about concern over any ambiguity in the original language, I just don't think this gets there.
Further discussion? Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I think it does go a nice ways in the right direction of trying to ensure that there is a policy in place if it's not going to be the default practice, where the default practice right now is the accrual of value of that vacation. We have that. That's why this legislation was brought forward. We have a default policy that needs to be considered, and this piece of legislation considers it. Now, we discussed situations and scenarios in our last debate, which indicates that there's a lot of problems with the language as it's written in the proposed legislation. This amendment provides clarification for the fact that it has to have a written, written acknowledgement, a written policy is acknowledged in writing by the employee at the time of commencing employment or at the time of entering into a revised contract, which means that you can certainly have a contract in place between the employee and the employer to change the circumstance from the default, which is our current policy, which is what the proponents of the legislation are looking for. And at the same time, it ensures that that agreement has to be in place in a reasonable way to protect the employee. This is a balance, and it's reasonable to assume that an employer should have the foresight, if they don't want to go with the standard default, what the court says, that they can put a simple contract into place, and that's not asking them too much. This provides a balanced approach where the legislation as written doesn't provide that balanced approach. And, Mr. President, I'd hope the body would support that balance.
Further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I look at the amendment, I believe I know what the sponsor is trying to do, but I'd have to rise against the particular amendment for a couple of reasons. First of all, when you look at – this is the problems I see with the amendment, Mr. President. If you look at line 8 of the amendment, what you're talking about is we're talking about the written policy at this point, and the written policy is acknowledged in writing by the employee at the time of commencing employment. That may be fine, but what about if the policies are revised? I mean, if you're working a place for 10 years, you can probably expect some revision in the employment policies at some point during that 10 years. And so this, I don't understand what this, what, where we're at under this language, under that situation, because obviously now, and there's an issue, I think, that Mr. President, I think you talked about that yesterday during Committee of the Whole, that generally, if you've got that agreement, I mean, you're entitled to whatever you, what the policy was up at the time that it changed. And that, I don't think that anything that the, it's in the bill now where this amendment would change that. You're entitled to whatever the benefit of your bargain, whatever the terms of the policies were while you were employed from the time you started until they were changed. I think that's a fixed right. But now we have this a time of commencement. It doesn't, so this would seem to me to include, determine that either one, you could never change, Mr. President, this on line 8, you may never be able to change your employment policies after the commencement of employment, and I just don't think that's practical. The other fork of this is continuing on line 8 through line 9, or at the time of entering into revised employment contract. Wyoming has been an at-will employment state, and employers in our state go to great lengths to ensure that there is no employment contract, that there is, or to be very, very careful in defining the terms of employment contract. And generally what you have when you acknowledge in writing, when your employer hands you if you have written policies, there's usually an acknowledgement that you would sign to say, yeah, I've gotten a copy of these and I've read them and I agree to them, or at least that I've got them and I'm notified of them. But then usually there's some language in all cap letters that say nothing in this policy is intended to construe that there's an employment contract other than an at-risk employment contract. And you go to great lengths to have a big disclaimer that takes language right out of various court cases to ensure that you're modifying this revised contract employment. So when every time you start talking about revised employment contracts, it's going to create a red flag for almost all employers around the state. And you know, if what we're trying to do is just ensure that the written policy is acknowledged, there's a simple way to do that. You can simply put acknowledge. You can add the words in some place acknowledgement or to that effect. But this amendment, I think, it starts to plow new ground, as our majority floor leader talked about. I think it heads it creates a novel concept of employment law in Wyoming that I don't think heretofore we've seen.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can learn and I will learn. I went over to the other side and visited with the prime sponsor of the bill, who happens to be in the profession of law, and his only caution here was, you know, this kind of looks like an employment bill for people like me. So it was interesting that a couple of our good colleagues behind me stood up and cautioned you in the same manner. If we're trying to get to an acknowledgement, I think my good friend from Casper told you how you can do that. This might be going a little bit too far and getting us into an area where we would be laying, you know, a minefield for some of the businesses out there. And so I take to heart the cautions that you heard behind me. Thank you.
Senator Meyer, second.
President. Mr. President, we're not trying to lay any mines out there or heck, cause people to run into furniture in midnight or 3 o'clock in the morning, Mr. President. But let's look real careful what this amendment is. Essentially, if you go clear down to line 6 after employment, and if you put a period there, that's the exact same language as what's in the bill right now. The only thing we add is written acknowledgement. Now, folks, if you have an employer who has a written policy and can change that policy without notifying the employee, in any manner whatsoever, which is what the bill does right now. That's what the bill does right now. That, I think, frankly, that's, not the right thing to do. And that's why I just said that you have to have a written acknowledgement. And we're not talking about a whole labor policy contract. We're just talking about the written acknowledgement that's in the bill. And that only deals solely with termination and leave days. What happens when you're terminated? What happens to the value of the leave days? Do you get them or don't you get them if you're the employee? And that's all this amendment does, is say that the employee just acknowledges that they know what the policy is. That's all it does. And it says, and it goes on to say that at the time of entering into a revised employment contract, and there was some discussion about, well, what happens if one company sells it to another company? Well, there could be a revised employment contract on just these terms. It's not the whole contract. It's not the whole shoot and match or ball of wax. All it is just what do you do with vacation leave? That's the only element we're talking about here. It's just vacation leave. And so for the notification, it's just that the employee acknowledges in writing, yeah, okay, now I know what my vacation leave is. I know what the terms are. That's the only thing that we're doing here, is just so the employee knows what they are, and they're necessarily not changed without that employee acknowledging that he's knows what the changes are. So it doesn't change law in any other way. Keeps the same policy as what the bill does. All it adds is acknowledging in writing. So pretty simple little concept, Mr. President.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 79 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment has failed. Division has been called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed.
Okay, Drew. You said there was a
second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 79 has failed. House Bill 79 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 111, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 111, tips and gratuity sales tax.
House Bill 111 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 112, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 112, tip distribution policies.
I have an amendment.
Okay. My amendment is?
There's 2 amendments. The reading clerk will read second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 112.
House Bill 112, second reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3 after line 13.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 112 and ask the body to recommend to the body for its favorable consideration. What we've got in this is what I'm trying to do is, as I looked at the tip distribution policies, Mr. President, it occurred to me that what we've got in the law now is it seems to be that without some change in law, you can't have these, or at least they wouldn't be, they'd be unenforceable agreements potentially with employers. And so what I did here is I left the bill exactly as we finished up with it yesterday, but I added a new paragraph at the end. So we'd go and after you be on, so we'd insert this on page 3 after line 13, there would be a new section that just simply says, as we read the amendment, no primary server shall be obligated to enter into an agreement or an arrangement requiring the pooling and distribution of tips. This paragraph shall not preclude enforcement of an agreement or arrangement for pooling or distribution of tips voluntarily entered into by a primary server. So the nature of this is simply you can't force an employee into this, but if they enter into this tip pooling agreement, then they have to live by it. I was so inspired by our good friend from Laramie County and his pleas to the free market system and the freedom of choice yesterday, I was moved, deeply moved, and so that's why I bring you, in the spirit of that movement, I bring you this amendment and ask your favorable consideration. It comes down to this, Mr. President, I believe, and members of the Senate, is these tip pooling arrangements, and if we believe the good senator from up near Devil's Tower, you'd be crazy not to enter into this agreement, because ultimately you smooth that out. I would think if you refuse to enter into this agreement, my guess is that the bartenders, your drink order is going to be the last one to fill, and your customers may not be quite as eager to tip you from the service from the team that you might otherwise receive. So, but nevertheless, Mr. President, this is the United States of America, and you shouldn't be forced to enter into an agreement if you don't want to. I urge your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. This piece of surgery takes the heart out of it. Just killed it. There's no bill left. If you're going to pass this, there isn't anything left. This sets it up for an automatic failure. There's going to be one server in every crew, doesn't matter who it is, says don't want to participate. You just killed the whole ability to put together a system. And it is a country of choices. When you go to work for a place, you can say, I choose not to work where they tip pool. That is fine. You can do that. But it lets the guys that run good operations that say, we're going to treat all our help fairly and evenly, be treated fairly and evenly. And it works it through where everybody gets their piece of it. And for that reason, I encourage you not to gut the bill with this.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I think it's a good start in the right direction to make it optional. Mr. President, I distributed a spreadsheet to everyone. Since this involves math, it gave me an opportunity to get Excel out and engineer it up for a few minutes and do a scenario based on what we discussed yesterday to see really whether this is saving money or costing money or how it works out. And I came up with a couple of hypothetical restaurants. You can see the names up at the top. And the restaurants have 5 waiters, a couple of bussers, and a host, all of which would be tipped wage employees. On the left-hand side, we have the situation based on current law, where you have waiter number one, a very good waiter, earns $54,000 a year, one of the waiters that the good senator from the Devil's Tower area talked about, an excellent waiter who's really bringing in some money. And then it goes down to waiter five, who's not doing quite as well but still has a pretty decent wage. And then you've got your bussers and your host all earning minimum wage at this point. You can see the total annual wage costs for those individuals is $264,000, nearly $265,000, and that the employer cost for those is $64,800. Now, when you use the 15% wealth redistribution calculation that we have in our second hypothetical restaurant, things change rather dramatically. The details of the math can be seen on table 2, the bottom half of the page, but the take-home message is that rather than having the employer covering salary costs of around $4,260 per waiter, those high-performing waiters so heavily subsidize the bussers and host that they're actually a net earner for the restaurant in this scenario. They have $1,704 of their salary taken by the employer in addition to the wage, $4,260, to redistribute to the bussers and the host. So in this situation, you can see that once you redistribute, the total expense to the employer for all of the salaries of the wait staff and the bussers and the host is only $20,160 for a net savings of $44,640, which will go to the profit line instead of the employee line. That's a savings of 70% of the total employer cost for salary. That's a heck of a good deal if you're the employer. But when you're the bussers or the host, you don't make any more. It's still 100% because all of that money is spent taking them from the minimum tip wage of $2.13 up to $7.25. They never get over 725. They don't make any tips, so to speak. They just have their salary paid for by the wait staff instead of paid for by the employer. While at the same time, the waiters earn roughly 90% of their original income. This is the realistic scenario. This is what actually happens. 10% of the salary of the waiters and waitresses would be taken away to subsidize the salaries of the busers and the hosts. If we make it optional, I'm going to guess which option the waiters will take. I agree with the good senator. It'll probably collapse the system, but that's a good step in the right direction because this is not an equitable or fair system. Now, what you have, effectively, is that redistribution of wealth. The last thing the good senator said in his previous speech in the last debate was, if you pass this bill, or if you don't pass this bill, your stakes will cost a little bit more. Well, I think in reality, if you don't pass this bill, things will be the same. But I'm curious to know whether if we do pass this bill, since the employer is going to earn an additional $44,640 a year, perhaps we will get cheaper stakes. But I'm going to guess the stake will cost the same amount of money. The income of the employer will go up. The wealth of the employees will be shared. That'll be a mandate from the system. And we will have what's effectively an unfair, biased marketplace because it's to the advantage of the employer, which is typically the case in unfair, biased marketplaces. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, you know, I've sort of watched this debate go, and I'm on and against the amendment. And folks, let me tell you why. Recently, I've been involved in litigation on wage claims by a restaurant that's a popular restaurant and caused me to interview all the wait staff, the kitchen staff. And here's what I can tell you. This idea that there's a special personality that's out there that somehow sells all the steaks and collects all the money is a myth. There are people that you may want to give a higher tip to because you enjoyed their company, enjoyed their service. But in reality, there are other factors that really cause the collection of wages or tips. One is, what hours of the day are you assigned to work? If you're assigned to work in a local restaurant from 11 o'clock to noon, you get one crowd. If you're assigned to bust the tables or wait the tables from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, you get a different crowd. And then within a restaurant, what tables you're assigned. Some tables generate lots more income than other tables because of their location, because of their size. It's different if you're doing the bar as opposed to large tables, large groups. And then, more importantly, the number of shifts you get. And what ends up happening in this is that restaurant managers sit down with a very complex situation where they've got long-term employees, they've got long-term employees they like, long-term employees that frankly are a pain in the neck, they've got great young employees that are working up, and they've got a bunch of people who are just part-time. They're just trying to get their hours in. And throughout this, the employer has to say, how do I keep an entire group of employees happy? Now, certainly, I would assume that any employer is going to, if he puts a pool of earnings together, he's going to have a system that keeps the good employees there. And it's not going to be just shared equally. No, but the notion here is let me pool it. But then he's got to pool out with respect to who's working the hardest, who has the best tables, which ordinarily is assigned to your best employees. What are your hours you're doing it? And how do I keep young people coming in on short hours? A lot of folks that come in and work in a few different hours, and they're always looking for more hours. And then people move out of the business, and that creates more hours. But this, the complexities of trying to assign times, assign what tables, trying to assign hours of work are far too complex to put in an amendment such as this and say there's one rule that applies. And in the end of the day, it's not the employee who, a single employee that gets to drive the rules. The employers need to drive the rules, and I think all they're asking for is the ability to say, look, in order to keep a whole set of employees, we want to be able to pool wages and allocate it. But the allocation system will have to be such that the best earners are rewarded, the best workers are rewarded, but other ones are rewarded enough to keep them there. There's no point in having being the best waiter at a restaurant when there's no busing staff or there's no cooks. You can be the best waiter in the world and there's no activity going on. I'd urge that you vote no.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, I respect the bringer of the amendment and his intention. But this amendment, as we've heard from two different speakers previously, has the ability to really crush this bill. This bill is about freedom to run a business in the best way you can, and to hire the people that'll best work on your team, and to have that team provide great service and have a successful business. It's not the employers don't have to take any action based on the bill, but this amendment really brings this bill to its knees and loses its effectiveness, and in fact hobbles free enterprise. I'd urge you to vote no against the amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Mr. President, essentially what this amendment does is allow the wait staff to keep the money they earned. That's what it does. It allows the wait staff to keep the money they earned. And an employer can do all those things that to run a good business without taking money from their wait staff.
Senator Driscoll.
Chairman, does just the opposite. The money they earned, they, team, whole bunch of them, one person gets to pick the money up at the table. The rest of them just get what they get paid. This is a team. They is a great word. It's when that gal picks the tip up, $100, $50, $20, it's they. It's the gal at the front that brought them in, or the guy, the maitre d'. It's the person that served the wine. It's the person brought the drinks. It's the person did the silverware. It's a team. And when you tip, I would wager to say for almost everybody, you didn't pay for that person. That's part of what you paid for. You paid for great service at the restaurant and being taken care of correctly. So they is absolutely what it is, and that's what this allows. It allows the tip to go to them as a team. I encourage you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, again, it sounds great, but when you run the numbers and you have some numbers in front of you, it doesn't work that way. You're not tipping the bussers or the host. You are subsidizing their minimum wage. They don't get extra money. If they did, if they started at minimum wage and then shared in a tip pool, that would be something. That would be a distribution based on the we concept or the they concept that we were just discussing. But that's not what happens when you run the numbers based on this legislation. It just isn't. That does sound good, but that's not how it will turn out. The way it turns out is when they become tipped employees, they baseline at $2.13 an hour. The distribution of the 15% of the wage from the waiters and waitresses goes to take that $2.13 an hour up to minimum wage. That's how the system's going to work, and it doesn't even get them there. There still has to be a little bit of additional augmentation. Now, we heard the concept of hobbling free enterprise. We heard the concept of allowing the employers to do what they want to do. But as the person at the restaurant, you know, as the person who's dining that evening and sitting down, you are giving a tip to a waiter or a waitress that comes to you, and this bill allows the restaurant to take that tip away. You don't get to say whether or not you want that tip taken away. To reach in between that individual contract between the person who's serving you and you as the person dining at that restaurant, to take it from them and redistribute it. That is not free market. That is not hobbling free enterprise. That is a redistribution of wealth. It circumvents a system that's been in place for many years in many countries, probably the fourth or fifth oldest profession, not sure where it rates, but it's a system that's in place to reward the service that's provided, not to subsidize the income of the employer. If there's any response to these numbers which indicates that the bussers or the host or hostess will come out ahead in any way, I'd like to hear that scenario. The bill as written absolutely ensures that it's just $44,640 of additional income to the employer. That doesn't sound nearly as good and friendly and great for rewarding the bussers and the hostess as does the scenario that we've heard from the proponents of the bill. I like the concept that I'm hearing, where we're rewarding everybody for hard work. But the way the bill's written does not do that. This amendment moves it in that direction, and that's why I hope the body will be on and for the amendment. To allow something to be optional provides for that free market opportunity and for the choice to be made. If this amendment does gut the bill, it's because it's a bad bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wasn't going to get up, but I need to now. I'm seeing the numbers here, and my good friend makes some great arguments. But the thing that he leaves out of this is the health and vitality of the business. And where that extra $45,000 is going to go. And it also presupposes that waiter one is going to receive a reduction in pay. I can't imagine that. Waiter five won't either. The point is that additional $40,000 to $50,000 that goes into the health and vitality of that business, do you suppose that they might hire another employee? Very possible. They're certainly going to keep wages the way they were. And what if it presents the opportunity to pay a higher wage? I'm against the amendment. I like the bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Christensen, for your second time.
Mr. President, it's generally recognized that graphs and figures are put together in a certain fashion to illustrate a point or to make a point. I just put that out for you. But I'd also like to share, I went to somebody in the industry that's a leader in Wyoming, works across the state, but also worked in other states that allowed this. 6 years, they were a primary server. Great confidence and experience in this process. They very much appreciated working in high-end and low-end restaurants and having this system available. And being the one that was the first line of collecting the tips, they appreciated the balance, the soundness, and common sense to the whole program. Huge supporters of this very bill and have seen it used in the industry and applied to them. And they were the ones that we talk about interfering with their livelihood and stream. Strong supporters of the bill, I'd oppose you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Meyer, for a second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on Committee of the Whole, we heard for 25 minutes that this was a voluntary program. That's what we heard on this floor. And now an amendment comes to say that this is a voluntary program, and then we hear that it's gutting the bill. Then we hear, Mr. President, that these funds are going to, today we're hearing this, and I want everybody to remember what we heard today. And if I'm wrong, let somebody correct me. We heard that more money is going to be paid to the bussers, the hosts, and these other people in the tipped and gratuity polling distribution policy, and those are enumerated in the bill, and it's the wait staff, the bus staff, the service bartenders, hosts, and counter personnel who serve customers. That these people are going to get paid more than minimum wage. That they're going to get paid more. Because on third reading, Mr. President, I'm going to bring an amendment that says that. Now, if that's what we heard today, that's what I think I heard today. That we're going to redistribute the wealth, and believe me, Mr. President, we are taking money out of the waiter number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We're taking money out of their pocket to redistribute that to these other employees. And if it's what I heard today is that money that we're taking out of those employees on a mandated program directed by the employer, that's going to increase the wages over the minimum wage so everything works together. So they all get rewarded. That they're actually going to get more money than minimum wage. That they're not tipped employees at $2 and change an hour. So, Mr. President, that's what I want to make sure that I heard today, because I think that's what I heard. Yesterday I heard that it was a voluntary program. This makes it a voluntary program. I just want to make sure that what we're saying on this floor, that we understand what we heard the FERC Committee of the Whole and what we're hearing today. Because, Mr. President, right now, without this amendment or the subsequent one, which essentially does the same thing, that makes it a voluntary program, I got to agree with the good senator from Albany County that this is a redistribution of wealth, and the only place it gets redistributed is back into the employer's pocket. And we really shouldn't, and I'll agree with the other good senator from Albany County, we shouldn't be getting into the weeds on this type of employment thing in the first place.
Senator Hastert. Thank you, Mr. President. And I also wasn't going to get up, but my colleague from Natrona County, excuse me, made a point that, you know, that I had to just talk about too here. And he's saying that there's nothing that says that the waiter is going to make less money. Well, this morning, because I have an awful lot of respect for the prime sponsor of this bill over in the other chamber, went over and talked to her and just expressed my concern. And the exact words were, well, look, it's not, the bottom line is that, that waiter can be assured that she's going to get 85% of what's set on the table there. That's not 100%. That's 85%. That's less money. And we haven't even addressed a restaurant that goes 24 hours. And what happens to that wait staff, and what's going to happen with the pooled money, you know, in the prime time as opposed to the graveyard shift? I mean, there's an awful lot of issues here for this.
Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, just to be quick here and clear up a few of these things we've talked about, this is good work on the hypothetical and the hypothetical. The one thing it misses is that this practice is already going on. It's in an unofficial program. From 10 to 15%, the waiters already give to the rest of the staff. And the problem that causes is tax problems. The waiter pays taxes on that 15%. Doesn't show it to the other people, and they don't pay taxes on it. So the waiter that I talked to, said that would be good because then they wouldn't have to pay the taxes. The employer then collects the taxes from the correct person. So the person that submits that it wouldn't be a decrease in the wages is probably correct because that's already been going on. The other thing is it's only up to 15%. We're not taking the entire tip away from the waiter, as has been said. And yesterday we did say it's a voluntary program. It's a voluntary program for the employer, not the employee. So every restaurant has to decide. And how do they decide? They talk to their staff and say, should we do this or shouldn't we? and they come to an agreement. That's the voluntary part. Once this restaurant has agreed, then that's how they do it. Thank you.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Not to belabor, but just one quick little point that under our current system, the way it works right now, the bussers and the hosts that you see, they don't get any tips. So they make their full minimum wage, no tips. What will happen is if we look at the chart, that makes a great deal of sense to me, that $44,640 then is redistributed to them. If we keep the current system. So I would strongly favor support of the amendment. Thank you.
Anybody else before the sponsor takes his second time? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, the quote that my good friend was looking for, I think, was from Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens, who, in references, he said there were three kinds of lies. There were lies, there were darned lies, and there were statistics. But I offered that to help him because he was remembering there. You know, Mr. President, Wyoming prides itself on being a right-to-work state. And right-to-work is you can't be forced to join certain types of shops. And that you can, but you don't have to. And you've got the right to work, and you can't be excluded work. You can't have a closed shop in Wyoming if you refuse to join a collective. And, you know, that's the problem that I see with the bill, is, again, we're a right-to-work state. And I find this bill seems to turn that on its head. So as we go through, I just address some of the points that were up to be, you know, what we heard yesterday and what we've heard today is that, you know, but going back mostly to yesterday, what we heard, this was a team effort, and that if we had these agreements, that everyone would do better. I believe that if that's true, then, you know, that's what capitalism, which is what we pride ourselves on, capitalism is at its best in that regard. And the concept of this is supposed to be the better that we do as a collective in our restaurant, the better I will do. And the concept was that, you know, if I know that part of the better I do, that I'm going to then share that with the bussers will clear my tables more quickly, and I'll be able to get another turn at my table, so that I'll be able to serve them, be able to get more tip, in turn share that with the busser, and they'll do better. He'll be more responsive to me, and he'll be better excited about doing that work. The same thing was the guy who's in the service room where they make the drinks and get them ready to bring out to the restaurant. The barkeep there, because there's that serving that tip, he'll be more responsive. He'll get my drinks faster. I'll get my drink orders in. They'll be right, and they won't be watered down. And, you know, it'll be, and I'll get tipped better, and I'll share that, and we'll all do better. And so I believe that. But I also believe, Mr. President, that if that's the case, you ought to be able to explain it to the wait staff, and they ought to be able to figure that out for themselves. And they ought to have the choice. If they think they can do better by sharing with the collective, and they're convinced of that, then they should be able to do that. But, Mr. President, if they're not convinced that that works to their advantage, then I don't see why they would be forced to join a collective in a state that prides itself on being a right-to-work state. All this amendment does, it takes what before has been is done, but creates an issue with respect to taxes and probably some other unemployment and other types of wage issues that come up. But now this bill expressly allows it. But all this bill does is say that if you can convince me that that's the right thing to do and that we will benefit as a collective, fine. I get to join that. But if I think that that doesn't work, then I don't have to. Urge your support for the amendment.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 112 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's passed. Division has been called for. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand.
Communist. Communist, please stand.
do with my 112? You hit.
Ten.
The amendment is passed. Senator Cooper, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, up here in the gallery in front of us, we have a group of young people who are all dressed in red. If they'll stand up there, I'd appreciate it. These are the Skills USA State Office Team, and they are Sutton Wills from Cheyenne, Josh Dillinger from Buffalo, and Shane Lopez from Lyman, and Cody Nelson from Cheyenne, Phil Asbury from Rollins, Sherry Bixter, I guess, from Douglas, didn't get it right, probably. Noah Daniel from Cheyenne. Ed Mon from I guess that's his or man, from Douglas. And Eileen Morford from Douglas. Okay, there we go. I think I got them all. Oh, John Larson and Tony Dickliver from the state advisors. Anyway, if we'd welcome them to the Senate, I'd appreciate it, Mr. President.
Welcome to the Senate, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd also like to welcome the folks from Leadership Laramie. Please stand up if you would. These are the future business leaders from Laramie, and again, they are also looking at our seats and planning ahead. So welcome them on behalf of the Senate, please.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, my good colleague from Natrona County made reference to a law in this state, and I just it always gets talked about in the former, but I just, all I'm going to do is just express the total law, and it says you don't have to join any organization as a right-to-work state, but it forces that organization to represent you at their cost. That's the total law.
Well, thanks for sharing. Okay. I welcome the people from Laramie. Didn't get a chance to say that. We have another amendment. Second reading amendment, number 2, to House Bill 112.
House Bill 112, second reading amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 2, line 2.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment 2 to House Bill 112, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, there is a technical problem in line 6 and 7, and so I would withdraw that part of the amendment now and look at maybe doing something on third reading on that, but that's the page 2, line 16. Addition, so I would withdraw that part of the amendment at this time, Mr. President.
You're withdrawing what part?
Line 6 and 7 goes to page 2, line 16.
All right.
So that's withdrawn. Mr. President, this is much of the same discussion that we had on the last amendment. That just what this amendment does is go in and makes it voluntary for not only the employer but the employee. Goes in line 2, it strikes out the language setting and enforcing, so it at this point it says shall not prevent an employer from setting and enforcing. We change that to administering a voluntary or administrating voluntary policies regarding the pooling and distribution of tips. Then it also goes down in, Mr. President, in Romanet 3, and strikes out the shall not, inserts may, and so and then goes on to strike be required to, and strikes out more than, and inserts up to. So it reads, where an individual is the primary server responsible for food and drinks, that individual may contribute up to 15% of the tips and gratuities received by that individual to a tip pool. Mr. President, I think this goes into the essentially makes it exactly the same as what it is right today, with the exception that if the employer is administering the program, then the tax implication that the good senator from Natrona County spoke of, that said that you've got some folks that are making the money that have to declare that income, and under the table or how or on top of the table they redistribute that to their busser because he's a good busser, or the bartender, or the maitre d' because they get the customers coming to him, or they mix the good drinks, that if that money goes to those particular individuals through the administration of the employer, then it's reported as income to them and not to the waiter. So it takes care of the federal tax implication problems that you would have under today's voluntary situation, and essentially allows for the administration to occur, which makes everything voluntary, but gets rid of the tax problem that you'd have with what occurs today. And essentially makes it a marketplace environment where if you've got a good busser that's doing their job really well, the wait staff, the waiter who's getting the good tips, knows which busser is doing the job right and which one isn't, knows which bartender is serving the right types of drinks. And so it's essentially a free enterprise system that the employer administrates primarily for tax purposes.
Discussion on the amendment? Senator Driscoll.
Oh, we've kind of beat this horse to death, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I do want to clear up a couple misconceptions. There's some out-and-out stuff that's just not true hitting the floor. As federal law says everybody gets minimum wage. I don't care how the tipping works, anything. Federal law says you will make minimum wage. If you're paid the $2.30 an hour, $2.10, federal law says if it doesn't work, the employer fills in the difference and makes it to the wage. You cannot pay people less than the federal wage. The reason they get paid less is because the tips bring their wages up to a higher level, and everybody recognizes that. We have that part. Now, on the other part of it, as far as how this works around, fire your computers up, pull up that spreadsheet, and add one more column to it. And let's add the column on all five of those waiters that shows what happens when the place doesn't run good and their wage actually declined by 20, 30, or 40% because your food sucked, your service was bad, you didn't like where it was at, so you went down the street to a different place that treats their help differently. And that's what this is about. Is we talk about those waitresses making $40,000, $50,000 a year. The reason they're making it is because all of them work together, and they like this. I'm going to tell you, for a huge part of the people, and you heard the good Senator Teton County stand up and talk about it, a majority of the people that are making those big dollars like the tip pooling. A big part of them are going to go to their employers and ask for it to go ahead and happen that way. There's a reason they do that. They want the people around them to succeed the same way they do. I'd really encourage you to think real hard about it, because, like I said, you can manipulate these spreadsheets, make it look where you're taking money away from everybody. But when you take it away, sometimes you don't make it. This is kind of like going out on a job and doing things together. There's a good senator over there who's got an airplane, you know, and sometimes if you don't have a pilot or a co-pilot or a waitress in the plane, things don't work well. And that's with all business things, is there's methodologies to make things work better. So really think about that last column, because you can take her down pretty bad, take away from a good thing and make it worse.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 112, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment has failed. House. Really?
Yeah, really.
Division's been called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Amendment has failed.
Again, it's failed.
House Bill 112. Having read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time here? No objection. It is so ordered. House Bill 116, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee.
House Bill 116, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 1, the reading clerk will read it.
Your committee number 2, Appropriations, reviewed House Bill 1 pursuant to Joint Rule 14-E-1e. The following lists are provided. Dispensing with further reading, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1F, House Bill 1 is referred directly to third reading. House Bill 1, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, and Act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, before we start going through all of the amendments that the House put on the bill, I'd like to have you all grab your goldenrod. I just want to start with one thing that we all understand. And, Mr. President, that would be on page 1, where you go under expenditure and you go to the bottom where it says budget bill, draw, and transfers to LSRA. That's the amount of money, Mr. President, that when we had our Craig estimates from October, plus the reductions that we have done to state government, that's the amount of money that's left with the House position and the Senate position. And, Mr. President, if you look at the House position, it's $10.7 million that's left on the table after their amendments, and you look at the Senate position, there's $12.5 million left on the table, so the Senate, if you want to say, spent less, about $1.8 or $1.9 million less than the House did in their amendments. Mr. President, you should all have the sheet that shows all of the amendments the House put on, as well as each individual amendment. Mr. President, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and talk about each one. There are some that are identical, but I want to explain the ones that are. Then we're going to talk about the ones that are not, and then I'll try to relate to those back to what the Senate did in those positions so you'll have a good position and understanding of all the differences that have occurred between what the House did to the bill as it left here. Mr. President, if you'll start with identical amendment 2001A, and I'll probably refer to these, and the counterpart will be just the senators that have sponsored them in the Senate. Mr. President, the first one deals with the veteran service officer's position. We had the Von Fladen Amendment that restored the two positions, and the House did as well, so they agreed. Mr. President, the second one is the $10,000 from the Tobacco Trust Fund for services at camps for survivors of childhood cancers. In the Senate, that was a Bebout Amendment. It was the Esquibel Amendment in the House, and they both agreed. Mr. President, the next one was the drug courts, and it was the Cooper Amendment in the Senate that added $20,500 more for the cost of gaining accreditation. You recall the discussion that the original amount of money was not sufficient, and this money came within the budget, so there was no new general funds, and that agreed that the House had a similar one, so those are identical. Mr. President, the next one is the Kraft Amendment. It's a report by August the 1st of this year for Early Childhood State Advisory Council to the Joint Education Committee. The House agreed with that one. Mr. President, the next one amends the language of footnote 1, and this is a $420,000 general fund that deals with the Department of Corrections. You may recall the discussion we had on this. It's where we had vacancies and beds at the Honor Firm in Riverton. We had too many people at Torrington, and we wanted to move them through the system. So we would take 70 people from Torrington, transfer to Casper. Out of Casper, they go to Riverton. And there's $420,000 general fund money one time to accomplish that. We had a disagreement, Mr. Chairman, with the Department of Corrections on that. He thought it should be ongoing, and quite frankly, I didn't. So they have to come back in the exception budget and justify the additional cost. The House agreed with that. They're similar. Mr. President, the next one adds $726,500 out of the Capitol Building Restoration Account for the purpose of funding the Level 2 study for the State Capitol Building. You'll recall the discussion on that, and I will remind the body that we have $91 million in that restoration account. Mr. Chairman, the next one, it cleans up the language on the non-accredited providers. It was just a cleanup language, and that was a Bebout amendment, and there was one, the similar one in the House. The next one, Mr. President, was the Senate Bebout amendment that talks about a compilation of reports and data that's currently done by the school district to see if there's a way that we can get by with fewer reports, fewer notes, and maybe they're being redundant, and there was a similar amendment in the House. The last one, where they were identical, Mr. President, was a Bebout amendment in the Senate and the Harshman in the House, where we took care of major maintenance component because we've been all over the place, and we put in language that it would be 100% would be funded by the Community College Commission. And, Mr. Chairman, those are the only ones that were identical. And now what I'll do is just go through the rest of them. And Mr. Chairman, some have been deleted, and they were further amended later on, but I will spell those out as quickly as I can. The first one, Mr. President, was a co-amendment in the Senate that talked about where the footnote where the speed limit is set at a rate below state law as a result of an environmental study. They had a similar one in the House, but what they took out of it was that under the Senate amendment that Senator co-sponsored, it would halt construction. They didn't feel you should halt construction, and that's the difference there. The next one, Mr. Chairman, was the Lubnow amendment that adds $150,000 general fund, and this is the audit for the forensic audit. The department, he deleted that, and it comes back later. I'll get to that at that point in time. The next one, Mr. President, is there was a footnote that required our work at the Half Acre Gym to display historical, culture, and current significance of transportation, ag, and minerals. They deleted that in the House. We put that in, and we said that it should be under the purview of the Board of Trustees. The next one, Mr. President, is deals with the distribution on the one-time bonus we're going to give to the state employees. And as you recall, the footnote that described that had two payments, I believe, one in August and one in December. I can't remember the dates. Anyway, the amendment was that we would do it just a one-time deal instead of two. And so that would be done in October rather than September or December. And the House had a similar amendment. It was just worded a little differently. And actually, the House amendment probably flows better, and we might consider letting them have one amendment when we get to conference, Mr. President. The next one is pretty significant. And what they did, this is on the PLF holding account. You may recall we had a lot of discussion. We went in there and we capped that at $450 million. We've all had discussions about the school foundation program and how, as we look out two bienniums out, that we are, in fact, in the red to the tune of $60 million based on the spending we're now doing, student enrollment, and those other assumptions that we've made. And then any money over the $450 million, and in your golden rod, that's about $46 million right now, would tip into the Common School Permanent Fund. And the House did not like that, so they eliminated the tipping provision. And then they increased that amount from $450 million to $810 million. And, Mr. President, it's pretty simple how they came up with $810. They just took what the school foundation program cost per year and divided by two. So they said that if you will, that LSRA for the school foundation program now will be at $810, not $450, and there will be no tip into the permanent fund. We had a lot of discussion on that. I think that the Senate is more right on that one. We'll see how we do. The next one, Mr. President, it creates a task force on capital rehabilitation and restoration, and and they had some discussion in there about the makeup of it. We had a bill here that was a Mr. President's bill, and we'll talk about that later. They've changed that around, and I think it might be something we would consider. The next one, Mr. President, is an interesting one. They added $500,000 general fund money and a footnote for the purpose of contracting a performance and efficiency study of YDOT. And I guess the discussion in the House was that there's a particular consultant out there that can do a better job than all the other consultants YDOT's hired. And so they think we ought to do another study to see if we're spending the money the right way. That's further deleted, and they come back with a different amount of money later. Then this was the next amendment is second reading amendment number 37. It was the Burkhardt Amendment. What it did, we had the Jamestown Rio Vista loan that we were going to take care of out of general fund dollars. He got up and took it out of water development account, too, and obviously that didn't last very long. You'll see a little later where that's changed. The next one, Mr. President, is second reading amendment number 38, and this is once again changed, but what it does, it requires the courts to present a 4% budget reduction. Of course, in the Senate, we said they shall not have to do any. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, if you go to second reading amendment number 39, this is a very interesting one, and it's pretty important, members of the Senate. We had a lot of discussion over here. This deals with a one-time bonus that we'll be paying to state employees, and this, of course, includes the University of Wyoming Community Colleges, and it includes, at this point in time, K-12. And Mr. President, we had an amendment here that would have eliminated that, and I know the guy that carried that amendment, it was soundly defeated, and I got the message from the Senate on that one. And what the House did, though, was pretty interesting. What they did is they said that for school districts where you have all these various step increases, and you know, these are included in the foundation program's model. They may not, in fact, go to the teacher, but they're in the model. And you know, for the first 20 years in the model, every teacher receives around $825 a year. Of course, state employees don't have anything like that. And then after that, they receive around $200, and those are some numbers that were presented to me. What this does, it nets it out. It's an offset. So if I'm a teacher and I receive more money because of the step increase that I would normally get than the 1% would give to me, then I get none. If I receive half as much as the 1% would give to me, then I would get the half. So what it means is that everybody will get at least a 1%, but some of it may come from the foundation program, and some of it would come from the extra money that we'd appropriate to the foundation program. And that's a significant difference between the Senate position. Mr. President, the next one is second reading amendment number 40, the Berger Amendment. And this talks about moving $500,000 from the Community Facilities Program. We all had a lot of discussion about that, Mr. President, and it sets it up for expanded foreign trade efforts. We had that amendment in the Senate. It did not do real well. And then, Mr. Chairman, the next one is the technical corrections. The Bebout Amendment and the Harshman Amendment, essentially they're the same thing. They just put them in a different order. And actually, here's the second thing we might want to agree with the House on. Their order was a little bit better than ours, so we might cave into them on that. The next one is a thing that we'll probably have a pretty good disagreement with them on. It deals with the Secretary of State, and what they did is they added new money, $121,000 general fund, and restored the FTE for the attorney. And we had the Scott Amendment in here, of course, that what we did is we took, eliminated two positions in the public nurse program at DOH, transferred that money over, and added the position back, so there's a significant difference there. Mr. President, the next one, which is Second Amendment number 43, this deals with the ACA and all the rules that we're looking at coming fast and furious from the federal government. And again, the tall Natrona County Senator in charge of labor thought this was a good idea. I think it is too. There's really not a lot of difference. What the House did is they agreed with us on one permanent, one temporary position for the insurance department. However, the way they took care of the one out of the Department of Health was different. They authorized the House to fill that with one of their frozen vacant positions, and the Scott Amendment adds one position and no money. So there's a little difference there. The next one, Mr. President, goes back and takes the money out of the water development account for the Jamestown Rio Vista loan. This is a Senlick Amendment, third reading amendment number 5, and puts it back to general fund dollars the way it was originally in the bill. Mr. President, third reading amendment number 8. This is, again, a position that differs from the House, and it deals with two positions in the Department of Environmental Quality, Land Quality Division. And we had an amendment in the budget bill to take two positions away. The Meyer Amendment, you may recall, and we had a lot of discussion with the department. There are two land quality positions that they had not filled, but they're going to fill, that are pretty important in terms of permitting. We agreed with them, and the compromise that we made under the Meyer Amendment is we reduce one MLFTE and take another position and no money, and the House had a little different take to put the money in and only reduced it by one position. So Senator Meyer will get to wrestle with them over that. Mr. President, third reading amendment number 9 gets back to the efficiency study for the DOT, YDOT, and it was a Nicholas Amendment that reduced it from $500,000 to $300,000, excuse me, and more significantly eliminated the general fund appropriation and took it out of YDOT money. And as I understand it, of course, you can't take it from the fuel tax. That's constitutionally prohibited. So they probably took it from the severance tax diversion they get for their funds for roads. Mr. President, third reading amendment number 14. This goes back to the Scott Amendment and how to deal with the position at the Secretary of State and what they did in the House, where they had a footnote that said, if there's a vacancy that comes up in the future, we don't know who it's going to be or what it's for, but we will take that away. And so I'm not sure that's a good way to deal with that, but that's what the House did in that, for that situation. Mr. President, the next one, the Walters Amendment, House third reading amendment number 15, deals with the cowboy marketing program. Kind of ironic that we had these cowboys here today for Team Wyoming, which was great to see them. But what they did is they just said, you're going to take care of these things, but we're not going to give you any money. We had the Schiffer Amendment that was split, and we had a lot of discussion about that. What it does is it appropriates $118,000 more dollars for that program, but it takes it away from the capital costs that we have under the public defender, so that it was a no net increase, and then they took the money from another position. What the House did is they said that you shall do it in the tourism budget with no new money. Mr. President, the next one is a significant difference. And what they did, and we had a lot of discussion about the pooled interest money, and of course the pooled interest money is what we use to balance our revenues and from severance tax, from sales tax, and then anything left in that spills into the LSRA, and we had a balancing amendment in the Senate that said at November 1st all this left would spill. What they did in the House is they captured $40 million of that. So understand that now $40 million more dollars, if it's even there, would not go into the LSRA, that would go to the general fund, so there'd be a $40 million more available. If you're so inclined to want to spend more money, then that's what the House did, put $40 million more on the table. Mr. President, third reading amendment number 18 gets into the provision of how we deal with budget reductions. And the Harshman Amendment that I said earlier had put 4% for the judiciary, went three ways, 0%, 2%, and 4%. And then they went along with the other language that we had that you'll see, and we'll get to the Nicholas Amendment a little bit later, which is the next one. Third reading amendment number 22, and what the Nicholas Amendment did, and the House had similar language. It says that if, depending on the Craig estimates for October of this year, if it's at the same level or below, we want an 8% reduction. But if it's above that, then the governor has some latitude to look at 2%, 4%, and 6%. The only other thing they did, which is probably not a bad idea, they said that these reductions shall go before the appropriate standing committees. So it'll be the same situation that we did during this last interim session, where the governor asked for the cuts. All of the agencies came to the various standing committees. The standing committees made their comments. The governor got those, as did the Appropriations Committee. Then we both developed the budget. Mr. President, the next one deals with the footnote on the $15 million that was in the budget bill going to landfills. And what the House did is there was a budget amendment in the Senate that failed to allow the governor to be able to take up to that entire amount, $15 million, for fire suppression. It did fail in the Senate, but the House put that amendment in there to allow the governor to go into that landfills account and take up to $15 million out of it for fire suppression. Mr. Chairman, third reading amendment number 25 is probably the major difference in terms of spending that the House has with the Senate, and it deals with the park beetle mitigation efforts. And what this amendment does, Mr. President, it took $1 million cash money out of the general fund to the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund and $1 million more to the Department of Agriculture for pine beetle mitigation. And you remember the Driscoll Amendment in the Senate, what they did is they said the governor shall be able to use up to $2 million out of the fire suppression account that we had profiled and put into the budget. So there's a significant difference. So this actually takes general fund money and says it shall be used for park beetle mitigation. The Senate's position was that the governor may be able to use up to $2 million out of the fire suppression account if he wanted to. And that really is a lot of the difference between the House and the Senate position in terms of the overall spending. Mr. President, I talked about the forensic audit that was in the budget bill before, a House amendment before. This is third reading amendment number 27. This deleted the further one, changed some language, and adds $150 million have a forensic audit of the Department of Ed. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about millions because that's all we seem to deal with, Mr. President. Thanks for the correction. The next one that we have is third reading amendment number 28, and this deals with the makeup of the Joint Legislative and Executive Task Force on Capitol Building Rehabilitation and Restoration. And the House did an interesting thing, Mr. President. They really changed the makeup of that. Presently, as I understand it, we have 4 legislative, 5 elected officials or the representatives, and 5 public members on that board. They all vote. The House thought that the legislature should control what happens to the Capitol. So they changed that around and said there will be 6 legislative members and 5 from the executive, and that's the makeup. So the legislature would control what we do with our state capital. Pretty interesting. Mr. President, the next one deals with the superintendent of public instruction and dealing with agency 005, which is the state superintendent, as constitutionally mandated, and what we think that those provisions are and the money in there to do that, as well as taking everything else and putting it in a new agency called Agency 206. Very quickly and briefly about that, the differences between the House and the Senate, Mr. Chairman, is the House came with 7 positions, and the Senate was 9. The House spent $1.23 million. The Senate spent $1.5 million. In terms of how that money was spent, the 400 series, which is ETS, was the same. In the 200 series, which is travel, the Senate and the House agreed on the amount of travel. There was a difference in the 900 series. The Senate had $83,000, the House had $50,000. And then the other significant difference is we had a footnote dealing with teacher to teacher, and they did not. The next amendment, Mr. President, third reading amendment number 31, this gets back to the community facility payment program to utilize that $500,000 for international trade, and this did not change the funding scenario. All they did was they took it out of the Wyoming Business Council and put it in the governor's office. Members of the Senate, you'll recall that the Anderson Amendment took existing money from the governor, kept it in the governor's office, and had $75,000 appropriated. The House has $500,000 appropriated for this. Mr. President, the last amendment, third reading amendment number 35, was $10,000 out of the Tobacco Trust Fund, and it's going to provide a new tier of insurance rates for smokers, so I guess smokers are going to pay more. We didn't have anything like that in the Senate. And, Mr. President, that is the difference. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
May I have privilege of the floor, Mr. President?
I'll try to make it quick before we start on the rest of the budget. I'd like to introduce future business leaders, state officers, Olivia Haw and Maddie Curry from Cheyenne East and Cheyenne Central up here. Give them a round of applause.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. There being no further discussion, House Bill 1, in accordance with Joint Rule 14-1G and Joint Rule 14-1H, House Bill 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of 5 members from each House to meet to resolve the differences between the Houses with respect to both budget bills, Senate File 1 and House Bill 1. The conference committee is as follows. Senator Bebout, Chairman. Senator Dockstader. Senator Meyer. Senator Perkins. And Senator Hastert. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
That's for now.
I think that that is an appropriate motion at this time.
Okay, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. Folks, when we come back, we'll do third reading first. Then we're going to move up the Revenue Bill 69 to first in order to get it through the general file before we lose the conference committee on the budget.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment tonight. We'll take up House Bill 126, Engrossed Agriculture Operations, House Bill 134, Engrossed Private Roads, House Bill 225, Engrossed Transfer of Ownership of Livestock and Brands, House Bill 228, Engrossed Transfer of Federal Land Study.
Further announcements. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in 30 minutes at 12:30 to take up House Bill 215, Engrossed State Investments for Public Purposes, and that will be in room S-16.
Further announcements. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Wednesday, February 13th at 8 a.m. in room S-1 to take up House Bill 51, Probate, Objections to Appointment, House Bill 24, Probate Amendments, House Bill 119, Engrossed Department of Family Services Programs, and if we have time, we'll pick up House Bill 197, Summary Procedure for Distribution of Decedent Property.
Decedent.
Mr. Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, your joint conference committee that you just recently appointed, will be meeting hopefully at 3 p.m. today in room 204 to start the arm wrestling with the House. And, Mr. President, but we will stay here at least through House Bill 69 for the debate on that particular bill. But otherwise, Mr. President, if it's okay with you, we might be excused after that to go start work on the conference committee.
You bet. Further announcements. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.